The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon, everybody. Happy Wednesday, and welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I am your guest host, Tiffany Ray, and today I am super excited because we have the X Factor Investor Show, and the special guest today is Mark Hutton, and he's going to share with us, guys, some unique and timely approach to solving his real estate or some of, the real estate problems out there. I like to remind you guys that this is a live show, so we are happy to take phone calls. The number to be to reach us is 1-877-772-9658. And if you are tied up at work or otherwise unable to call, you can send us an email. We're checking those too. It is Vena Radio. That's VENA Radio@gmail.com. And so right now I'm going to bring Mark onto the line, and I have to say, I don't even know how long it's been since I met Mark, but I remember him as the apartment guy, and my, he's doing some great things now, and I can't wait for him to share with us his story about how he started as a new investor and went straight to apartments and straight to adult care and residential assisted living and all those types of things. And so, Mark, are you with us today?
I am. Good afternoon.
Hey there. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Wonderful. One of my favorite real estate investor people. I'm so happy that I get to sub for Vena today to talk to you about this topic. So we're just going to jump right in because I know there's a lot to talk about and a lot to share. And so I'm just going to ask you, right to it. So the introduction that I had was mild, but I wanted to preface it by asking you a question that I think will bring everybody up to speed. So before you got started in this real estate business, what did you do, and what skill sets do you think you brought alongside from your profession into your real estate business today?
Sure. Well, first of all, I'm delighted to be here and share with you and with Vena and the listeners, and humbled to be asked to join. So I'm delighted to be here. So I started life as a mechanical engineer out of Purdue many decades ago, and was mostly in automotive, aerospace, aviation, that kind of thing. I'm a real gearhead geek kind of guy. Mm-hmm. Three motorcycles in the garage right now prove that, and I'm the only rider. So there you go. So did that for, a couple of decades or more. And, it's an up and down business because I was on the sales end of engineering. And that's an up and down business. Things go well, you're a champion. When things aren't going well, you're in the bottom of the bucket. And so I endured layoffs and different things over the years. And then we finally discovered real estate as a potential avenue to get out of the rat race. Even in engineering, it's still a rat race. Mm-hmm. And so we had started that a little bit. And then I got laid off, and boom, I decided I was going to be full-time that. I think to the follow-up piece to your question about what I brought from that, because I was a sales guy and my job was to help my clients, my customers, solve their problems with whatever products I had at the time, I learned a lot of problem solving and learned collaborative working with others. That and just, being open to seeing other possibilities, being generally a people person. That's why I went in sales in the first place. I love people. Tiffany, you're one of my favorites as well, so that worked out well.
Thank you.
So I think that's the things that I brought from my professional career into real estate.
So I heard a couple of key things there. So we always say that, you know, a lot about real estate is solving problems. And so that's why I called what it is that you do. And I know a little bit about what you do, a timely approach to solving problems. And you said something else about collaboration, because we know that a lot of this has to do with relationships as well. I want to ask you to tell us a little bit about where you came from in your real estate journey to what you're doing, and then we'll talk a little bit more about some habits and things like that that you've developed along the way.
Sure. So getting started, my lovely wife, Janet, who was then just my girlfriend, we bought a house together, and it was a HUD repo, and we decided we were going to, you know, we both had full-time jobs. She is a speech pathologist and me as an engineer. And, you know, we set about rehabbing this house. We did an okay job of it the first time, and then it flooded due to a busted pipe in the middle of winter, and so we had to do it again. So there was a lot of learning there. we still have that house today. That was about 9 years ago, I guess, 8 years ago or so. Didn't even know what a RIA club was. Made plenty of mistakes. Could have saved a lot of headaches, but didn't. And then I had moved down to Cincinnati, but I found on some random evening this real estate meetup group in Dayton. So I drove 45 minutes north to Dayton, and it was one being held by Mr. Darren Carey. And love that guy. So he's like, hey, you know, you should join the RIA Club. You're down in Cincinnati. Why don't you join the Cincinnati RIA? I couldn't even spell RIA at that point in time, but certainly I knew that I needed some help. Joined the RIA Club, and man, everything I thought I knew went out the window. I thought getting into real estate was buying a house and renting it, yep. And that was it. And I realized that that's a very small part. The other thing is I learned is that, you know, to your collaboration point, Tiffany, it really is a team sport. You know, I need Darren, I need the lawyers, I need the realtors. You need a lot of people. So many people in the RIA Club have just bent over backwards to help me. And now Jan and I are at a place where we help others, and we love, love, love doing that. And so if you go into it thinking you know everything, which I kind of did at first, I will admit, and learned some hard lessons, lost some money, things like that. But it really is a team sport, if you will. And delighted to be, part of the RIA Club and giving back at this point in time.
Absolutely. I understand that it is a team sport. I agree with you. Shout out to Darren at Dayton Capital Partners. And we are up for our first break. Stay with us. We'll be right back for more conversation on The X Factor. Welcome back. Welcome back, everybody. This is Tiffany Ray, your guest host today on Real Live Real Estate Investing. And today we're talking about the X Factor investor. And my special guest here is Mark Hutton. And we were just talking about real estate being a team sport, a collaboration, a community, if you will. And those are some of the things that you get at your local RIA. Ours happens to be Real Estate Investors Association of Greater Cincinnati, and there are others out there as well, because I know this show is national, but we would love for you to come and check us out and look at all the 32 plus offerings that we have on our calendar. As a matter of fact, tomorrow is our local in-person meeting, and that's going to be how to make your deals attractive and super sexy to lenders and both private lenders. That meeting starts at 5:30 for the networking, and then on to the educational component. I believe Vina is going to be hosting alongside of Robert Mohan. You can find more information at Cincinnati RIA. That's CincinnatiREIA.com. And earlier I mentioned that this is a live show. I see that we don't have any callers or emails right now, so I'm going to remind you the number is 1-877-772-9658, and your questions can be sent via email to VinaRadio.com. VinaRadio@gmail.com. Let me get that right. So, Mark, we were talking a little bit about your segue from being an engineer and to moving into real estate and that first flip that worked, didn't work, and then worked again. And of course, you still have that, right? But hey, I know all Correct. About those, right? We can swap war stories some days, but I will tell you. So I definitely understand how you cut your eye teeth with that. But you've moved into something that I would call super, it's just attractive, and it's near and dear to my heart. But I will let you say more about this, because when I first met you, and you could talk about this if you like as well, you were the apartment guy. And then that right there was like a big deal to me. I was like, oh, look at this guy. He's doing like hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions or more in apartments. And then you moved into something that was like multi-million dollar thing. So tell us a little bit about your transition from that house with the flood into the apartments, into what you do today, which is helping others with the residential assisted living.
Certainly. So yeah, we, you know, Janet and I had started trying to figure out the rental business with a tremendous help from all the members at the RIA Club in Cincinnati. And, so we were doing pretty well. We gathered a couple of houses. We had purchased a fourplex, and we started looking down at, you know, we were of the age, we're like, yeah, you know what, maybe in 5 or 6 years or so, we'd like to retire. So, you know, how many doors, quote unquote, doors do we need? How many rental properties do we need to do that and retire comfortably? And both of us made decent amount of money. And we decided we needed a lot of doors, like 80 or whatever, something like that. Like, okay, I'll be 107 before we get 80 houses
right.
or 80 units. So, well, how can we expand that? And so because of the amazing connections with the Cincinnati RIA, I met my apartment mentor, Anthony Chara, out of Colorado. Fell in love with him, did his boot camp, learned how to buy apartments, and we started buying apartment complexes. That's where I first learned about OPM and other people's money.
Mm-hmm.
And we learned pretty well how to raise private equity for our deals. And eventually, by our third apartment complex, we were starting to do it exclusively with other people's money through the syndication process. And we were doing quite well. And then... You know, Janet at that time was working on finding a place for her mom, who had dementia and strokes and such, up in Detroit area. Never really found a good place. Janet was working in local nursing homes, and just, you know, the people there have huge hearts and they work so hard, but there's never enough of them. And so also through introduction to the RIA, through the OREA National Convention, we learned about the Residential Assisted Living Academy out of Phoenix and fell in love with that. So we said, okay, we're doing these apartments. Let's look into residential assisted living, see what that has to offer. And we completely fell in love with that. We started Mimi's House here in Cincinnati, which is our first home in Loveland. And then we've since opened two more homes, and we have purchased land to develop two more homes from scratch. All will be Mimi's House here in Cincinnati area. We are partnered in others, Indy, Cleveland, Atlanta. So we really have fallen in love with residential assisted living. And just if you don't know what that is, I just realized I didn't describe that. We are taking care of seniors who need assistance with ADLs, activities of daily living. It's assisted living, but it's in a small luxury home. And when I say small, our first home is a regular house in a regular neighborhood. It has 8 residents. We converted the home to have 8 private bedrooms. But it's a regular house. You eat in the kitchen just like everyone. We do our activities in the family room. And it really is a congregate home. And it really gives you a heart-centered place where seniors can age with grace and dignity, and we have 24/7 care for them. We're starting to go a little bit bigger. Our next two homes were 12, and we recently opened our 15-bedroom home. But these are just lovely places for seniors, and that's what we've transitioned to. We really transitioned out of the apartment business, and we're 100% focused now on residential assisted living.
And that is wonderful, Mark. And it's still, I hear you talking about collaborating, and I hear you talking about partners, and I still hear you talking about with joy in your voice the community piece that for the residents that you serve, you and both Janet. And I think it's wonderful because all of this stuff, it's just transitions into something, and it sounds like it's really, really something you love. But I would say that being an engineer and then going to a single family, then the four family, like, man, this guy, he must be like super duper disciplined. Like, so when I think about that, well, I mean, this is what people think. It's like, how did you do all this? And
yeah,
you have this
Tiffany,
job
you've met
this...
me before, so that's not the case. But
but would you consider yourself super disciplined, or like why or why not? Or do you just show up with intention, a strategy, or like how did you get to where you are?
I think I will not say that I'm super strategic or you know, whatever. I think I get dedicated to what I'm focused on. Mm-hmm. And even though I may not be super efficient at it, but I think the one piece I think that Janet and I have had is tenacity. And we've certainly had plenty of ups and downs, you know, arriving at your first rental house in February and finding 3 inches of water in the floor and, you know, things like that, right? But we didn't let it stop us. You know, we learned from it. We moved on. We've had plenty of hurdles in all of the different kind of asset classes that we've played in. We still have a shopping mall in Pennsylvania that is, struggling, for example. But we learn from these things and you move on. I think the real secret that I think got us to go faster than a lot of people around us, a lot mm-hmm. of people in the RIA Club and others, is we didn't let the knowledge of everything paralyze us.
Mm-hmm.
So we learned enough to say, yeah, I think we can do this with help. And again, going back to the collaboration and the team, the help with the people at the RIA Club. Help with our mentors in the apartment space or in the assisted living space. You know, we were confident enough. I guess some of that comes from age and wisdom, but you know, we're like, we can do this. And if we fail, we'll just learn and keep going. And that's pretty much what we have done. We didn't feel that we had to know everything before jumping in. We knew just enough. We knew where to go for resources, where to go for questions and help. And we jumped in with the faith that we could do it, faith in ourselves and faith in the resources we had at our, we had available to us and jumped in. I think that's the real reason that we've been successful as quickly as we have been in a relatively short, 6-7 year period, gone from a single family home to, I think the last count was over 27 million in transactions. And over 8 million in private equity that we've raised, and now really focused on and even teaching the assisted living space.
Mm-hmm. And I heard you say a whole lot of things about habits and things that you've developed over time. And when I was little, they used to say, apply some elbow grease and stick to it and stick to something. But but I'm hearing you say you learned something and employed some just-in-time learning, and then you executed. So you followed up on it and you actually took action and you weren't afraid to do it. And so faith does have something to do with that. And I'm glad that you pointed all of that out. So I would say that over time, you've amassed all these habits and learned how to pivot. What would you say your most important habit that you have developed or would like to continue developing is that would help you continue to attribute to your success?
I think early on I had to get out of my own way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an engineer, so I think I'm smart. Well, I am smart on some things, but I am really dumb on other things. And, some of that was, there's confidence and then there's arrogance. And I was leaning more toward the latter sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so I think that first house that we rehabbed twice, things like that will humble you And that was a wonderful experience. It truly was. It wasn't at the time, but looking back on those kinds of things, and that, you know, everyone has those in their lives. But it was really a back to, okay, you know, we got this. What resources do we need? What do we need to do next? What's the next logical step? And stop getting in your way, like, oh, I know how to do this. I don't need any help, which I was doing it early on. And now, you know I need help. And it's interesting, now that I'm an instructor with the REL Academy, I help students across the country open their homes as a coach and as an instructor at the Academy. But I'm still learning all the time. And I think in my engineering career, I kind of stopped learning. I kind of, you know, I got what I needed, and I, you know, I learned a little bit now and then, but not much. But I consider the fact that I'm open to learning. Not that I couldn't learn before, but I don't think I was open to it. And I think that's helping me now as well, as we, you know, look forward to, you know, our future projects.
And I totally understand that. I agree with you that education is a lifetime solace. You're always supposed to be learning something. So I've been instructed that we're going to take a break. But when we come back, Mark, I'd like to start talking a little bit about business and a little bit about operations. So stay tuned, guys. We'll be right back after this message. And I hope you call in with some questions as well. Welcome back, guys. You're listening to Real Live Real Estate Investing, and I'm your guest host today, Tiffany Ray. We're talking to Mark Hutton about his X Factor Investor and how he has this, I would call, unique and timely approach to solving problems in the real estate arena. And before we had a break just earlier, we were talking about collaboration and community, and Mark mentioned something about private equity and OPM. And so that was very timely as well, because tomorrow we're having our in-person meeting, and that's going to be at Cincinnati RIA. You can find more information about that. And it's going to be about talking to investors, private investors and banks, about how to position your deal, that OPM that we're talking about. And then on the 14th, I believe Vina herself is actually going to be the instructor, and she's going to be talking about how to evaluate deals fast from your desktop. Like, everybody needs to know about that. You can find more about that at CincinnatiRIA.com. But before we broke, Mark, we were talking about your transition from single to quad to apartments to residential assisted living. And so along the way, that's had to be very busy for you. So, like, what do you use to track or prioritize your time, or are there any systems, particular systems, technology that helps you keep things running smoothly, or are you just like me with those Excel spreadsheets?
Well, you named it, Tiffany. So, you know, early on when we first got started, Jen and I both had our day jobs, and then I got laid off, and I thought, oh my gosh, the world's ending. What am I going to do? Mm-hmm. And we made the decision, with Janet still working, that I would work 100% on our real estate business. You know, again, trying to ramp that up to the amount of passive income that we would need, you know, to survive. And then 6 months later, Janet got laid off. So I can tell you, with as a relatively new married couple, we just had our fifth anniversary actually last month, you know, going through that with no income. Now, fortunately, you know, we've been around the sun a few times, so it's not like we were destitute or broke, but it was, you know, at the time it was bad, but honestly it was, you know, the silver lining there was we both got to work 100% in our real estate business. And I realize that that's a luxury most people don't have.
Mm-hmm.
But it really allowed us to focus and really figure out exactly what we needed to do and get on it and do it. Janet is better in the doing it. I'm better in the figuring out what needs to be done. So together we are a pretty good duo on that. Technology wise, yeah, I'm an Excel guy through and through. My CRM is Excel. My tasks, it's Excel. My financials, it's Excel. So yeah, I'm I go back Excel back when it was like Lotus 1-2-3
Lotus.
On DOS.
Yes, so I remember that.
So that'll date me, but technology wise, even though I'm comfortable with technology, I don't use a lot of technological advantages. Honestly, I try to keep track of things. I keep track on Excel, and we do the best we can. Reprioritizing, Janet and I sat down two nights ago, reprioritizing things, looking at all our to-do lists and things like that, and just figuring out, okay, are we working on the right priorities?
Mm-hmm.
Nope, this one needs to go away. This one's a low priority now. It was a high, now it's a low. This is new thing is high priority. And doing that and just communicating between us as both, life partners and business partners.
Yeah, and I think that connectivity is good. And I understand the love for Excel and super secret access databases that people don't talk about anymore. So I definitely was not making fun of you with that. But I know a lot of people manage their businesses differently. And you hear a lot of people talking about this system, that system, and how to do it easier. But when you're really good at something, sometimes simple first is the best way to do it. And if it works for you and you're accounting, then, hey, why not? So you talked about the things that you manage and keeping track of it. We do have one question from, and I'm not sure how to pronounce the name. That's why it took me a second. So I'm not going to even try. But this person asked for you to please talk about how many employees you have in your current field and residential RAL, and what some of the liabilities, concerns, or issues are that you see in that space.
Okay. Those are great questions. We definitely have plenty of employees. So I think right now, with just opening our third home, I think we have a total of about 35 employees. We only have two full-time employees, and that's our executive director, whom we just hired basically to replace Janet, even though we are still very involved in the business. But our lovely director, Danielle, runs our two homes and is in the launching of our third home. And then we have a director of marketing. Those are our two full-time folks. Director of marketing and admissions, her job is to fill the homes and keep them occupied. Aside from that, we employ caregivers, CNAs and STNAs for certified nurse assistants and state-tested nurse assistants. Not a requirement in the state of Ohio, might be in your state, but something that we prefer to do here in Ohio. We do employ nurses on a part-time basis. Most of our employees are part-time, working 12-hour shifts. But, yeah, right now I think our employee total is right at between 30 and 35. It does change. Ebb and flow a little bit. So that's on the employee side. So there's quite a bit of payroll involved in this business. That's quite different than most, mm-hmm. traditional, rental type things, whether it be Airbnb, short-term, mid-term rentals, long-term rentals, et cetera. But we, enjoy what we're doing. It's great when I walk into our home and I've got eight new grandmothers that just love me. So, it's really a warm, wonderful thing to be doing. The other part of the question was liability. So there's a lot of things that we do to address liability. There's certainly exposure to liability, right? You're taking care of people and their lives, and they're relying on us and our employees. First thing is to try to prevent any issues as best you can, right? We don't have carpets on the floor. We don't have elevation changes in floors, nor transition strips, rounded corners on furniture. I mean, there's a lot of things that you can do to prevent issues. A lot of it is supervision, right? We even design our newest homes that we've designed ourselves. We design them so that caregivers can have eyeballs on residents at all times. Someone gets up out of a chair, and we know that they can't walk well without their walker, and their walker isn't right next to them. That caregiver is going to make a beeline over there to that resident and help them up and get them paired up with their walker. So there's a lot of things to do. I always think definitely have liability insurance, but I think that's the third level. you know, we have insurance to cover us, and it is substantial, and it's not terribly costly, maybe $2 per day per person. So you can do the math on that based on how many residents you have.
Mm-hmm.
But so the first thing we do is try to prevent. You cannot prevent everything. We've had plenty of falls, broken bones, things like that. The second thing that we do is communicate excessively, right? When mom falls in the house, and let's say it's bad enough, there's a broken bone and she has to go to the squad. So the very first call might be to 911, right? This person needs to go to the hospital because they may have broken a bone. The very second call is to the family. Hello, daughter. Your mom has had a fall. She's fine. I'm with her. We're headed to, you know, this hospital, and I'll meet you there. And so we communicate with the families extensively, and they know, they know that mom or dad has the propensity for fall, let's say. That's really, unfortunately, the most common injuries that we have. But by communicating with the families all the time, we've, knock on wood, we've never had a resident family, through whatever incident has happened, wag a finger at us and say, you're responsible. We're mm-hmm. going to sue you, any of that kind of stuff, because we're very open and honest with them at all times about everything that goes on. And even when it doesn't require anything, hey, mom fell today. You'll notice she's got a scrape on her knee, and we bandage that up, but that's what's going on. And so by doing that, you're giving the family the comfort level that you are taking care of every little thing that you can. And I think that it reduces the propensity for liability issues or, lawsuits and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, so anytime you're in real estate, right, there's a possibility that something could happen. Somebody could fall. Somebody could, sue you for that fall, even if it is not your fault and your stairs were repaired and all your banisters work. But I love the fact that you're talking about excessive communication. I definitely agree with you that we should over communicate no matter what. And I think that the other piece of what people miss in your field, which, you and I share something very similar, is that you're responsible and you become connected to the people that are your residents. They become like family. But that other piece of it is that you have extensive forms to fill out for the state if something happens with incident reports and whatnot. And so, I think that's the other piece of it that goes along with, yeah, hey, I'm doing this multi-million-dollar build and, I get this amount of money per bed or per room or per door, but all these other things come along with. And so I think you summed it up quite well there. Looks like we have a call on the line. Jim from Cincinnati. Would that be my Mr. Jim Shapiro?
Yes, it is.
Hey, Jim, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? Hi, Mark.
I'm good.
Hello, Jim.
So
I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
You were in the middle of something, but I'll change it to, when you made the transition from single family to apartments, you didn't go from singles to twos. You went to bigger stuff. What did you have to do and learn and change and how you operated in your mindset to go from buying a one unit to buy in a bigger unit, to buy in a multifamily?
Great question, Jim. Thank you for that. I think, we started with a couple of single families and then we bought a fourplex. At the time of the fourplex, we realized early on, again, we both were still working full-time jobs, that we needed to rely on a property manager. And we got very, very fortunate. I know you're one as well, Jim. We had a property manager. We started up in Dayton. That's where all the single family and quad stuff is and still is. And so we had a property manager up there that we just loved and still do. And so we basically learned to rely on solid property management, which is how we were, able to transition. When we were looking at the apartment space, I knew I didn't know what I was doing. And so when we got trained through Anthony Chara's apartment mastery course, we learned how to do that. And we also started small. I think that's been another thing. People say, I want to get in apartments, and they go try to buy a 100-unit building. Now, that's a big animal. That's a beast, right? So we started small. We started with a 13 unit, right? It was back then it was under $400,000 and it was 13 units. So it was a small property. We already had a property manager in place because of our single family stuff, and she stepped in to take care of that. And so we did it in gradual steps, 13, 25, 40. And so I'm not going to say those are baby steps because I know that that's a big thing, but the mindset change was quite a bit easier, when, again, knowing that we had the backing and the support of Anthony Chara and his coaching team. When there were problems or questions or issues, it was first to the RIA Club, to you yourself, I'm sure, answered many of our questions when we were newbies, to you know, to more advanced, you know, very property specific kind of stuff. And I don't know if there's any one thing about that, but one, as I mentioned earlier in the call, really just kind of having the confidence and believing that we knew enough to get by and we knew the resources we could reach out to when there was a problem, and the confidence to just, you know, and faith to jump in and do it and learn it as we went.
So learning and having access to education on all these topics is what opened all these doors for you. You started
Absolutely
out and had
did.
No idea, you said, when you came here and you got into this real estate stuff and you learned about RIA, and now you've become an apartment buyer, a syndicated apartment buyer, and a residential assisted living person. How much of that did you learn through your access to the Real Estate Investor Association?
Well, 100% of it, because I was introduced to every one of these things through my association with the Cincinnati RIA, which I love and adore and will support for all of my days. Yeah, we knew nothing, and so we went into the club, and we, you know, I'm not shy. You've met me. So
I know you
will.
I
just asked a lot of questions. of questions, and everybody
has to
help.
By the way, let me add a comment. I'm kind of pitching RIAs here. Cincinnati RIA is one of the best in the country, but there are 30 or 40 RIAs all over the country. And I know this RIA's show's got listeners all over the country. You know, look for RIAs in your area. Google Real Estate Investor Association and real estate meetups, because there's ways to get this information and learn from people. And then be careful, because not everybody's as good and as honest as Cincinnati RIA.
I'll second and third that. Hey, guys, great conversation. We can continue on the other side. I'm being told we need to take a break. Stay tuned, guys. We'll be right back with more Real Live Real Estate Investing. Don't go away. Welcome back. This is Tiffany, and we are listening to Real Live Real Estate Investing. And before we took our commercial break, both Mark and Jim Shapiro were talking about mindset and what it takes, faith and strategy and intention and action to make the leap from being a what I would call mom and pop investor to investing in private equity, raising millions and having a multi-million dollar business. And so, Mark, you said that, I think Jim dropped, but the point that I wanted to bring out is that we were talking about corporate a while back, Jim and I, and then yourself bringing up what you used to do. And I know that people see these zeros and they go, oh my God, that house is 100,000. Oh my God, that house is 500,000 and it's a million, it's 8 million. But really, when you think about it, you said something about faith and being able to transition from this is 6 zeros to 8 zeros, right? So tell me, Mark, what would be your one thing that you would tell someone in making that transition from the small mom and pop to the next big thing, that one thing that might help them to not be a stick in the mud and take action?
Yeah, I think that's really a great question, because that, you know, if someone 5 years ago had told me that I was going to be considering anything in any capacity that had seven figures in it, you know, a million plus, I would say they were out of their mind. And now I'm working on a $14 million project, and I'm like, yeah, so?
Right.
So definitely a mind shift there. I can tell you there was, a number of things, training, But there was one particular book that really got me comfortable with debt, not just the $1 million, you know, price tag or whatever, but it was the debt associated with that. Oh my gosh, it's a $1 million project. It's going to be $750,000 in a loan. Oh my gosh, how am I going to handle that? Right. So, I'm a huge fan. I believe you are as well, of George Antone.
Yep.
And his financial philosophies and teachings are magnificent. Definitely recommend you reach out to him. He's based in San Jose, California. Just a brilliant, brilliant, wonderfully nice man. His book, Debt Millionaire, probably my favorite all time, even though it's not specifically focused on real estate. Debt Millionaire is the single book that got me out of my fear of I can do this. And it's not about just debt up to your eyeballs. It's carefully structured. It's got reserves in the deal. It's got reserves behind the deal. I mean, it's done safely and smart. And really, that resource is really what helped me kind of get over that hump of, oh my gosh, I'm looking at, because I think we, you know, our fourplex, I think was like 170,000, something like that, you know, back in the day. And the very next, our first apartment was 400,000. I thought, oh my, that's crazy. The 25 unit was a million and the rest were way more than that. But, you know, getting over that hump, I think Debt Millionaire, by George Antone was really got me comfortable enough to say, that coupled with, again, confidence and faith in ourselves that we could do this, confident enough to jump in and get her done.
And so we're inside the 3-minute mark, and we have one other caller. I think we might have time enough for him, and then I'll ask you for your final thoughts. Russell, line two, are you there?
Hi.
Hey, Russell.
Tiffany, how is it going?
All right.
And how are you? Thank you very much. And Tiffany, you half addressed the question I was going to ask just now as I was waiting from Meg. And thank you for addressing some of the mindset. And by the way, George Antone, I really, really like. I saw him a few years ago and about love the fact of trying to get my credit over 800 just because, as he was suggesting. Anything more you could address in the mind, whether it's in the mindset or anything in the structure? I'm guessing reach out, go out to your local RIA, get to know people, see what they're doing, what they're looking for, and how you can assist them and also vice versa.
Yeah, I think so. I really think so. You know, one of the things that we did is we got really involved in the RIA club early. We went to every event we could. We volunteered. We got involved, and what that did is that helped us get to know more and more people. That coupled with the fact that we weren't afraid to ask questions, and so we increased the size of our tribe, if you will, which is the whole RIA club. And that way, when things did happen, like, oh, I was talking with Dave the other day, and he mentioned something about this. And so you learn where those resources are, where that knowledge lies, better and better the more integrated you get and the more people you know. And then you get to the point which is really exciting, is someone comes to you, hey, you're the apartment guy, which is what I was known as. Hey, I got a question on this. Like, well, I'm not the one, but hey, you need to go talk to so-and-so. You know, being able to help and direct other people to help them out. And that's very cool, but that also gives you the confidence to go out and do things that may not be in your comfort zone, because you have this cadre of people behind you that you know have your back, and that's a really comforting, confidence building thing to have happen.
Absolutely, yes, couldn't agree more. I guess it's a get it, and I get getting more in person too versus online. Yes, I have a RIA about 50 miles from me or so.
Come and see us, Russell.
Well, there are people that come 100.
That's right.
You know, an hour and a half to our RIA club all the time.
That's
in Cincinnati.
Right.
I
highly recommend it. There's one gentleman comes down from Chicago, which is about 5 hours.
Oh, nice.
You know, when you find a club that really benefits you, that really has your interests at heart, like I truly believe my home club does, which is Cincinnati, you're going to stick with it, right? You're going to give as much as you get. Hopefully you give more than you get. And that's the beauty of these kind of clubs. And every speck of the things and successes we've had all started with the RIA Club, or at least being introduced to the resources through the RIA Club and then growing from there. Highly recommended.
All right.
And we appreciate your call, Russell. Thank you for calling in today. I think we have like 30 seconds left. And so, Mark, in these last 30 seconds, I would like to say, first of all, thank you so very much for having a chat with me today, our little fireside chat. And I am so very proud of you and cannot wait to see your new establishment. But you want to leave me and the callers with any last advice in these last couple of seconds?
Well, it's certainly a joy being here. Again, honored to be able to talk to the audience. I really think that, you know, have some confidence in yourself and know that you're capable of doing more than you think you can. All it takes is just a little bit of boost and surrounding yourself with people who've done it before you. You don't have to recreate the wheel. You can copy the wheel. And I think that that's solid advice in whatever you're doing. But being able to do that and then having the people behind you, that you have your resources, I don't think there's anything that can stop you.
I appreciate that, and you as well. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in today. Happy investing, and take care of yourself out there.